Welcome back to another episode of the Bogeyman Golf Podcast. In this episode, I'm joined by one of Ireland's great amateur talents, Hugh Foley. Hugh spoke about some of his career highlights from winning the North and South back-to-back, as well as some of his close calls, including finishing second to Matt McLean at the US Mid-Am. Hugh spoke very honestly about his struggles on and off course over the past year or so, and why he's confident 2024 will be a big year. This series is supported by AIG, dedicated supporters of amateur golf in Ireland. This series will showcase some of the incredible amateur golf across Ireland this year. Go visit AIG.ie for a range of exclusive golf discounts and benefits on their products. Golf Ireland members can save an additional 10% on their car insurance, and you can enjoy some exclusive benefits when you choose AIG insurance, no matter what level of golfer you are.
I would tend to be very honest about my game. I probably tend to be too honest. I actually want to know what Matt McLean's secret is, because I think it's pints or something. I remember going home, like leaving the course straight away. I was disgusted and pretty close to tears. That's a good question. Who took my cheese? Then went on like probably 2 months of like the best golf I've ever played. I need to get better to make a living playing golf. My dad was just like a massive sports lover, fanatic, golf fanatic. What motivates me is just getting to realize how good I can be. And I don't know what that is yet.
So Hugh, you're just back from Spain. How have the last few weeks been for you? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, cheers. Last few weeks have been a little bit more positive, a little bit better for me. I have been working pretty hard and starting to see a bit of that coming to fruition now. And struggled for a little bit of time there and maybe had a bit of a hangover from last year and stuff. Feel like it's just starting to come back up, hopefully. Can ride a bit of a wave now and work on that. So yeah, plenty of positives.
So you alluded to it there. Little bit of a hang up from last year, 2023. Not the year you were looking for, really.
No. Definitely a bit of a lot of disappointment, and you kinda analyze it and stuff of what went wrong. The bad part of sport is that it's gone. You know, you're analysing it to try and get better, but, you know, the moment's gone. It was a weird year because I had a couple of results that were my best ever in big events. So when you look at the big events in Europe that we play, it's European Am, British Am, St. Andrews, and probably Lytham. And in two of those, I was fourth. One of them I was 18 under for four rounds and, like, really good golf, but then miscut in the other two. So really inconsistent. And just trying to piece together why that was and what went wrong so that I can, you know, get better and keep pushing, keep motivated rather than get too down on it. And it's like golf's tough. I suppose sport is tough. It's just the way it goes. You have to really fight through the lows and stuff. But weird one, because it wasn't like a crap year.
No.
It was just didn't quite go the way I hoped it would.
It was almost like the good results that came, a couple of them were nearly at the wrong time of the year for you. Obviously, just when it came to, like, we're obviously talking about like Walker Cup selections and like team selections from that perspective. It's almost like some of those results came either a little too early in the season or a little too late. And you're like, okay, I'm playing good golf here. I know I am. It also just shows like the margins that you're talking about are like for my money, you're one of the best amateur golfers in Ireland around at the moment. So when you're talking about not making a team or just missing out on a team, like the margins are tiny at that level. Like that must be very frustrating.
Yeah, definitely is. Yeah, because people talk about for teams anyway. You know, they're picking teams all year or even for 18 months out. So. End of 2022, you get to a point where, you know, guys are saying, well, you're on this team or you're on that team, and then you get to you just keep progressing, but like it really doesn't matter until the team is being played within a couple of weeks. You need to play well at the right time. So yeah, for me, missed out on a couple of selections with Ireland and played well in between, and then missed a six-man team, but I think the team for that was selected during the European Am, which was it's just a little too late, and then Lytham was too early, and but at the end of the day, like, you know, I went to the Western Am, the US Am, and it was in my hands to go and play well there. but I didn't really get it done. So at the end of the day, it's down to how you play, and just didn't quite get it done. Yeah, you try and find little pockets of. It's the same for anyone at any level. It's the same for me when I was growing up. I'd have pockets of. You have 3 or 4 weeks where you just can't do anything wrong, and you're not thinking about it, and putts are going in. You don't know why, and that happened to me at the end of June. European Am, then went to the British Open qualifier and had 10 birdies and an eagle and missed by one. And then all of a sudden, because I wasn't on the six-man team, I had nothing to play in for 2.5 weeks up until the Western Am, and felt by the time I got to Western Am, like it was almost like that was gone. I was a bit deflated, but yeah, that's it. You have to pick yourself back up and find ways to play well. And when you don't have that run of form, and that's probably it. My bad golf, just not quite good enough at the moment. So yeah, that's, I guess, what I'm working on now.
It's interesting, you talk about going, obviously playing in the US, the mid-am and the Western Am. You're pretty much a full-time amateur now for this season. You're playing in and have for the last, 2023 and 22, in amateur events that not every other, all of your contemporaries are also going and playing. Yourself and Matt McLean went over, played the mid-am, went over again then last year. Does that kind of, obviously it's great to play in different tournaments and tournaments that other guys aren't playing in. Does it stand almost against you or to hurt you a little bit to go off and play in those tournaments? Or is that a case of like, listen, you want to do it and you want to play in these tournaments, you want to play against the best in the world, not just the best in Ireland and Europe?
I think it depends on the event, but I think it stands to you. Like if you look at, so Matt last year, probably say himself, you know, he's playing the majors. He had to miss some of the big ones, British Am, St. Andrews. And I guess it was hard for him to get it quite right. And he found his pocket of form then coming into that, played the Western Am, got to the semifinals, which was really brilliant golf. And that's where it can stand to you. So no one else is playing that. You know, you had Callum Scott, myself, Matt, possibly Barclay Brown, I can't remember. But so that kind of helped you. You're playing one of the best events in the world, the Western Am. And the US Am, he went and made the cut in the US Am. And so he's then guaranteed.
He's vindicated that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I feel like had I done the exact same as him, I would have been on that team as well. I think it can help. You want to play the best events in the world. And the way I look at it is I want to travel and see the world. And very lucky to do that as an amateur. So it kind of works in steps, I suppose, of like, you know, you're playing all the Irish stuff, and then I was lucky I did well in that, so you get a bit of profile, and then you get a bit of sponsorship, and now you can afford. And then we played the mid-am, and then that opened up just loads of doors for 2023 of getting invites. We were getting emails all the time to play in America and play in big events, and they want to host you, and that was super, yeah. So playing the US Am was very cool. I wasn't sure would I ever do that, because it's very difficult to get into that. You usually have to be in the top 50 in the world as an amateur. So yeah, never thought I actually would get into that. So I think it was worth the experience, and it's cool to see the, you know, the best players in the world then.
So you're saying that obviously you want to go travel the world and you want to play all over the world against the best in the world. As I mentioned, you're just back from Spain, before that Australia. How's the golf at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. It's more positive. So I think from August, struggled a little bit. I went to the mid-am and made the cut, but got knocked out. Q school, I was doing well and stuff, just wasn't really firing and didn't get through. So I'd say I struggled in Australia, and I think I really technically struggled without realizing what I was doing, couldn't figure it out. And then that turns into pretty, like, you know, goes straight to your mind then. And it can be quite tough. So I learned a lot, I would say, in Australia. I missed three cuts and played some mixture of golf. And became kind of felt, I learned a lot mentally because I couldn't fix what was going on. Technically, had a big shift in mindset, and then came back, was with my coach, and we figured out what was going wrong technically. And then so now I feel like I'm on the way back up, having gone through that mental struggle, and now hopefully fixing the technique, and we'll have hopefully that can come together now nicely for the season. I was going well in Spain first round and had a bit of a slip up on the last, and then going well again towards the end and had another bit of a slip up towards the end, but overall it's getting better.
You mentioned there kind of working on the mentality and the building your strength up on that. You also studied psychology in college, so is that a big focus for you, or is that somewhere that you have a keen interest in, kind of the sports psych?
I just have a keen interest in it. Yeah. I didn't actually study it. I didn't actually go to college. I went out of school. I would have been mad interested into it, and that's what I would have done had I gone to sure. college. But I felt I was just going to give everything to one thing, so that was golf. But yeah, I just have a real keen interest in psychology and sports psychology, sure. but even psychology in general, yeah. So just reading plenty of books and listening to lots of podcasts and, yeah, just trying to pick up what I can. And yeah.
What are you reading?
Well, I just finished the Michael Phelps book. So that's more of a, you know, it's a biography, but yeah. There's lots of nuggets from him there. Like, he chapters the books into mental okay. aspects and parts of the head. So he has like 8 chapters, and you know, they're like determination, willpower, ambition, blah blah blah. So amazing. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And then I was given this book by a sports psychologist who took my cheese. Okay. And it's a funny one. It's a short one. You can read it in like an hour and a half, and it's about kind of perspective. So that was a decent one. It's about follows mice and cheese. It's really simple, has pictures and everything, but it's really good.
Very nice. I guess when you're looking back at kind of this year and looking at the psychology side of it, do you ever look back at kind of that form you were in for 2022, but even going back before that, like obviously you won like the close in 2020, do you try and look back at those times and just take confidence from them and try and build on them, or is it a case of that's past, that's done, now I'm looking at kind of building beyond that, or what's the kind of the focus?
Yeah, it's funny, I was talking about that last night on the range, because I can be, I would tend to be very honest about my game. So if someone asks me, I probably tend to be too honest. There's probably a psychological training of, you know, fake it till you make it. Sure. So when someone asks me about my game, I probably should say, brilliant, it's really good, I'm playing amazing, I'm putting amazing, couldn't be better. But I would be very like harsh on my own analysis of my game, so I tend to just be honest. And so I was kind of saying that to this guy last night in the range, and then he was saying, well, sure, look, you've won this and that. And it's funny, like that confidence of playing well in those events, it does feel like it's like past, it's gone. You can't really like, it's not really a feeling you can just concoct by, you know, remembering it. You can a little bit, but it's not really, it doesn't stand to you for long enough on the course. I think it's just kind of like a fake short feeling of confidence, but the real confidence comes from I think just putting in the effort and slowly getting sharp again and slowly seeing it in your results. So I feel more confident now after Spain, but during the Spanish Am, I wasn't, you know, if I was as in as good a form as I was in 2022, I think I would have really pushed for like a top result. But there's times when you're just, yeah, you're not aiming quite as confidently as you're like, you know, you're still aiming for that bad shot that you have just in case, or yeah, you start to think about the cut line if you make a few bogeys, things that just don't go through your mind when you're on a rich vein of form. So yeah, I think I need a bit of looking back on those times and how I was. I definitely try and act like I am in a rich vein of form and how I did in 2022, and look back and think, what was I like then? But yeah, just trying to work on getting back to that confident level. All right.
Because you were very young, or yeah, you were very young when you got your first win, like the close back in 2020. You're still young.
Before I was a mid-am, yeah.
But I mean, like that was 4 years ago, and you've had a number of wins very consistently ever since then. Getting your first national title, first senior title from a championship, what is that feeling like? Obviously, it's a lot of vindication when you've been working so hard. But again, like it must be positive signs where you're like, right, I'm this young, I can go on, and I can win a lot here.
Yeah, that's that's basically it. I think back then it was, for me, I was 4 handicap when I was 18, so then, or 19, so 4 years later, I won the Irish Close by 10, was a bit...
hit by 10.
Like. I had to throw it in there. Trying to get my confidence back up. Yeah, it was kind of like disbelief at the time. You don't think you're ever going to do that. I hadn't played for Ireland, or I had played for Ireland, but I wasn't on the squad.
Yeah.
So you don't think you're ever going to do that.
Because you were what, 9, nearly 20? We just turned 20?
No, for the close, I was 22 or 3.
Okay.
Possibly 20, I can't remember. It was October 2020 anyway. So I never thought I was going to do that. And then you do it, and you do it by that much. And yeah, now I'm like, okay, I can do that again. And that's, I guess, what happened. And then I guess the key is to try and take that overseas and to keep progressing at who you do it against. Because the golf was good enough for those 3 days to probably beat a more international field. But it's having that belief in the international event that you can just play your own game. Yeah, you get that belief in your game, and you can see how good you can be, and then you just keep working on that and try to do it again.
And so, how long was it before you got to then test that game internationally after winning the close? You said like you won by 10. You were obviously kind of on men's squads, or you were coming into men's squads, international squads then at that point.
Yeah,
what was your first taste of international experience and being able to gauge your game at that level?
Before that I had played like Scottish Ams and things, and I don't remember. I think the following year we did the Battle Golf 2021.
It's just after you won the West.
Oh, okay, so that was 2022.
I asked for your trophy. Someone received that trophy, by the way.
So then 2021 I would have played I think 2022 was the first time I really, like, I came third in the Scottish Am, I got to the quarters of the Spanish Am, I was making cuts consistently enough, and probably 2022 before I don't really remember 2021, to be honest. There's still COVID and stuff, wasn't there? Yeah. So I feel like we only got 7 events. That springs to mind. We only got 7 events in 2021. I don't know why.
Wow.
COVID kind of stopped that, actually. Taking that kind of confidence into playing international stuff, probably. Okay. Yeah, because we didn't, like, there was no South Africa trip or Australia trip or any of that, obviously, with COVID. So 2022, 2023, before I really started to do well in some of these more international ones.
And obviously when 2022 came along, like I said, you were just the man to beat that year. Yourself and Matt McLean obviously went ahead a number of times, but was there something that you put into place over 2020, 2021 that started to click for you for 2022, or was it just a case of you're just getting reps under your belt, everything was more comfortable, and you were trusting the game?
Yeah, I think it's everything. I never think there's like a secret to sometimes you see, like, I actually want to know what Matt McLean's secret is, because he went from like not making one of the teams, the octagonal team, I think. Now, he might have been injured or unavailable, so he can correct me, but he went from there to being like number one in Ireland ranked player playing the majors and like coming in the top 5 all the time. So I want to know what his secret is. I think it's pints or something. He gets some sort of magic from pints that I don't get it. But I don't want to take anything away from him. He's, I think the same as him, kind of, you get more mature, your golf age matures, you get more experience.
Yeah.
So there's no real quick solution on that unless you're a bit of a superstar, like Rory McIlroy, maybe, if Sean Keelan can be like that. But I think for the rest of us mortals, it's... COVID, I did a lot of reading. I read like must have been 10 or more psychology books, and I was studying them, like I was writing them down and like seeing what I could remember. So there, I'd say a lot of that stuck to me. Did lots of short game practice, you know, went to the beach, hit lots of balls on the beach, and I think it just all comes together. But you need experience, and you need to just put in the reps, and then eventually it starts to work. So 2022 had its lows as well. So, but yeah, it kind of came a bit together all right.
Yeah, because I guess on course, like winning in the north and then what, the week later going down, winning the south, creating a bit of history. I think you're all just yourself and Darren Clark that have done it in the same year. Going into that week, where's your mind frame at?
Well, like before the north, and I think I've said it before, like I thought I was in a low spot with my golf. I had done well. Scottish Am was third, and had Spanish Am, had good start to the year, and then went and missed a cut in, maybe I made the cut in St Andrews, but I missed the cut in the British Am, and then I was like 20th in the European Am and shot an 81 in the third round, missed the cut, and I probably had a chance of making the St Andrews team. I didn't really realize, I didn't have much knowledge about that sort of thing, but I was probably close to that team, and then those two miscuts got me off that, and I was fairly down about that. Went to the six man team, I got picked for that before I shot that 81 in the European Am, so I got on that team and played pretty poorly then, and wasn't picked for two of the matches. One day I had to sit out and caddy, so I was feeling pretty low, confidence was pretty low. Wasn't really hit. I didn't really know where the ball was going, and then went to the north and shot three over on the valley course, which is supposed to be the easy course. I remember lads were shooting 5 and 6 under, and I remember going home, like leaving the course straight away. I was disgusted and pretty upset, pretty close to tears, I would say. And I remember ringing my coach, and he was like, just send me a video of your swing, and I did, and he was like, that's fine, like what's your problem? And he was like, just go out and play. So the next day I was like, right, I'm playing Portrush, it's a hard course, I'm just gonna aim wherever, I'm gonna hit it, and whatever happens. And I went out and played great, and then did it again and again, and all of a sudden won, and then went on like probably 2 months of like the best golf I've ever played. So it's bizarre. I think like you can get to such a low point where like there's almost nowhere else to go, that you just start climbing back up again.
Yeah. So getting left off of that team, and then obviously again with like Walker Cup then this year, does that motivate you? Do you hold a grudge? Because no. I guess there's been a couple of, I mean, after a couple of teams, you're probably like, what the hell do I have to do here?
No, I think it was fair enough. St Andrews team, that was fair enough. Had I been picked for that St Andrews team, I may not have played the North. I know Matt McLean did. I know a couple of lads sat it out just to be fresh. So I might have missed the North and the South, so I might never have won it. So I remember looking back on that thinking, like, happy days, you know. You know, it just depends on how you look at it, perspective, you know. Who took my cheese? Who took my cheese, you know? That's basically what that book's about, you know. It's like, do you look at it like, who took my cheese, this is unfair, or just go find cheese somewhere else? So I went and found cheese somewhere else in the north and south, and then the close, and no, the Walker Cup was fair enough. I wasn't in the top 10 by the time it came around. I wasn't there, so that was fine. Different times of the year, I probably would have been, but no, that was fair. Absolutely don't hold any grudge. I wish I was just playing well. I feel like I could have added to the team. I think you have to think that. Like I feel like how I played in the European Am at like 24 or 5 birdies for 4 days, then like that's great for match play golf. So I was putting great and stuff. I feel like I could have added to the team, but no. No, it's fair. I think there have been other occasions that I have talked about as well, the for maybe closer to home teams that could have gone my way. That can be tough to get over, being used as motivation. I feel I've played really well after those scenarios. So wasn't picked for the six man team during the European Am, and shot 9 under the next day. And you know, Lytham was around the Euro Nations team that wasn't picked for and came fourth in that. So in one hand, it's annoying because you're playing really well around when those teams are going. You feel like you can give value to the team.
Yeah,
but it has been a good motivation tool for me. So I feel like I've played well coming off really bad golf where I just have nothing to lose. And I've played well off being motivated by external factors. Yeah. So I think you have to look at it that way. If you can't hold any grudges in sport, like you have to, you can, you just need to use it as positive fuel.
Yeah, for sure. So again, getting your win at the North, it's a big turnaround from, like I said, you've been nearly in tears after round one to getting the win. talk to me about the emotions of that, because like the North is a tough test, like even in the best of weather conditions. If the conditions turn, it can be brutal.
Mm.
Like, you must have been exhausted by the end of that, but like physically and emotionally.
I think emotionally is like, it's one of the biggest keys to golf is controlling your emotions. And I was not in a good state. As in my own private life, I was probably struggling with things. And then being so invested in a sport like golf, which you have to be, you can get over invested and then the emotions take over. And that's not a good place to be. It's not a good place to be nearly in tears after the first round of a championship. So that was something I needed to address, and I kind of did. And I was glad I went to the range that night and then turned around. I was like, it was kind of like a funny moment with my coach. It was like, what's your problem? You're swinging great. And you really need to let go of emotion. I think that's what you kind of train on, to try and remove emotion. That's why you try and stick to the process and do your stay disciplined. But as a human being, the emotions, just that's, you're fighting that all the time. So I was fairly wrecked. I celebrated fairly well at the North. I wouldn't be like a big drinker or anything. I wouldn't really be able for it, but yeah. Having gone through those 2 or 3 weeks of poor stuff, I was wrecked. But we were out that night, and then Limerick played Kilkenny in the hurling, and my family's from Limerick, so I went to that and won that, which was great. Another couple of days, and by the time we went to the south,
so it was three wins really.
It was a few wins. And we went down to Lahinch, which is a great place. But I stayed off it. Then I was back disciplined, and but after the south, I had lost about 6 kilos. I'd say, as pictures of me now, I'm fairly. Either dehydrated or just burnt all calories. Wow. Mentally and stuff. I lost a good bit of weight for 10 days. So I was down to like 78 kilos, I think, by the end of that. So that was either down to drinking or the golf or whatever, both.
how different an experience is the South to the North? I mean, obviously, the South, like, you hear a lot of stories about family and friends traveling down to Lahinch for the south, and it's kind of like nearly a festivals type of atmosphere where it's really good support. How different is that as an environment to the North then?
I feel like the North with Portrush, the town, can be the same, and I'd say it probably is for the guys in Ulster. The old version of the North where 300 people played, I'd say it was fairly similar for the guys from up there. And then the south is just that for the guys from the Republic or from down there. So, but it's a really great mixture. The Portrush is probably my favorite course in the world, I would say, and an unbelievable test of golf. So that was amazing playing stroke play on that. I probably would prefer playing stroke play there than match play. And then you go to the south and it just has like a different feeling. Yeah, it's a longer week and you're right in the town and the people are brilliant and so invested in the tournament, that it is different. It's probably more enjoyable on a social side of things. And match play there is just like, I feel like it's more enjoyable playing match play on that course than stroke play. So I think it's like a really great 2 weeks. It's pretty now that the North has moved. It's a really great couple of weeks, and it's like very different. It's really good.
So then that year when you did go back to back, You won the two events in a row. Was your confidence then sky high after the North, or was it a case of like emotionally you're still like upset at what happened at round one, or was it a case of you very quickly just parked what happened and everything's great now?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, that's what I'm saying with the emotions, is that then you get taken away with the highs of it.
Yeah.
So I was just taken away with the highs of it then. Which it might be better to stay level, but you know, you don't get wins very often, so I really enjoyed it, all right. And you enjoy then the, you know, the guys know that you get congratulations and stuff. But I think with, you know, the help of my coach, who's quite a disciplined character, and bit of like a football manager, kind of an enforcer. He's like, right, you're going down there, like, not to strut around and be, oh yeah, I won the North last week and get knocked out. So I was very determined that week. I was really happy with how I treated the South. I stayed by myself with Sean McCown, who's a member at Raw Dublin, and stayed in his house, and he looked after me well, and I kind of kept away from any pubs and stuff, and enjoying the South. So and my goal, I remember that week, was to stay there as long as I can, and I was really determined to do that. Again, you're kind of looking back on, I've gone through like 3 weeks, which is not that long, of bad golf. Now I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to be really as disciplined as I can. So I started eating better then, not drinking, and sleeping well, and just fought really hard, and had a great caddy for the week in the South, Marcus Nolan, and just really enjoyed it. But I was really determined to stay there for as long as I could.
So then obviously you did get the win. Did you get a chance to celebrate that? Obviously you're saying you'd lost a load of weight, but
that was shocking.
Did you just continue
it? Yeah, that was,
continue it on?
That was not my fault. The Southwest, I guess, like, my, again, I've like family down there, so and great friends. So I was like, I remember the Wallaces, the Flemings, and they all seemed to buy champagne after it. And it was nice that they were there. My mom was there, my sister, a couple of my mates came down. So yeah, we were up in the clubhouse, and again, it's great crack, that clubhouse. And so we had lots of champagne, and then there was Marcus Nolan and Bobby Fleming, who were houses there, and Marcus caddied for me. They polluted me that night. We went to the Charlemont, is it? Is that the...
Oh, yeah.
I think
the
Charlemont. I'd never been in all my years playing the South. Like, all the stories are, I was there till 4 a.m, then I had a 6:30 tea time in the first round of match play, and blah, blah, blah. So I went to see what that was like, and the next day I was shocking, really, really bad. So I'm not a good drinker, so I can't stomach it. So I'm better off. But really enjoyed that, yeah. And... And was lost a bit of weight, but I think the Irish Close was soon enough after that, maybe home internationals and then the Irish Close, and so had a good time, all right. Yeah, just good playing good golf.
And so we were talking about before, kind of when you're in that state of playing good golf, everything kind of just becomes very natural. You probably have maybe one thought, maybe one or two. How enjoyable is it to be in that state where you're like, okay, you saw what was going on 3 weeks ago, or you had 3 weeks of poor results, turned it around at the North, batted up at the South, and then had another few good results between home internationals to close and the rest. Like, obviously you've got a lot going on kind of on course and off course, but is there comfort in knowing that when you step out into the golf course now at this point in your life, it's almost like a security blanket where you're like, right, I'm playing really well here. Mm. I'm doing everything right. Is that must be a lovely feeling.
Yeah, I think, you probably do have, I don't know what my swing thoughts would have been at that time, but would have been probably one at most. And then when you're on the green, everything just seems so much simpler, you know? And it's always been like that. And I think it's like that for my mates who are 20 handicap or what, you just, sometimes you just step on the course and you just feel comfortable and you're happy. And now I still made plenty of mistakes and made loads of mistakes in the close then. I remember first round 3 or 4 over, but your mindset's different, your perspective's different. You're not like, I shot 3 over first round of the close versus 3 over first round of the North. It's the same score. One day I'm nearly in tears, and one day I'm like, right, I can work on this. So
it's different cheese.
Yeah, it's different cheese. Yeah, yeah. So it's you just get into a positive feedback loop. I think that's what I had in Australia there recently at the start of the trip. Every bad shot, I had Matt Fitzsimons caddying for me. He's from Arglass, and he's living over there. And I had some wild shots, but like the wild shots really like are in my head, and I'm like, Matt, what did I do there? Did I just do something differently there? And blah blah blah. You're just getting a real negative feedback loop. And then all you can think about is the bad shots. And then all you can think about is avoiding the bad shots. Where eventually I turned around and I said, right, today, I was like, I told Matt, I'm not going to talk about any bad shots. Every good shot, I'm going to say, that was amazing. And that was interesting. That really like switched the cycle, turned around, and I felt better then. And you feel more comfortable on the course. So I think when you're playing well, you just have that positive, you only feed that positive wolf, as that old story goes, that you only feed that positive side and you just deal with things better. I don't think everything goes your way. You just deal with things better that don't.
What's your ambition then for this season? Like it's actually an incredibly busy year for amateur golf in Ireland. Without even looking, I imagine you're probably going to go look at the Mid-Am and the Western Am over in the States again. What events are you really looking forward to? I mean, the Amateur Championship up in Ballyliffin has to be up there.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Ballyliffin, that's going to be brilliant. I hope, and I think it will, because Donegal is a proud sporting place, and I think that's going to get a big crowd, and hopefully we can get Irish players playing well. I'm sure, I think the last year's British Am, we had like 15 Irish, which is an achievement in itself. So if we can get that again, I know a lot of lads have turned pro, so I love Ballyliffin. I won the Scratch Cup there on the Glashidi, and we played the Home Nationals on the other course, so I know it well. That's a big one, all right. That'll be fun. I think it really kicks off from you've got the Euro Nations if you play it, and then you've got myself and Matt are playing Seminole, which would be pretty cool, playing in an old man's Mid-Am event. But again, you can't really pass up that opportunity to play Seminole. So
what age are you?
I'm 26.
They brought the Mid-Am age
25
down.
Yeah. In so, America, it's always 25. Yeah. They're bringing it down here as well.
And Mid-Am, like, that's short for like, so middle age. It's not like mid handicap.
I think it's middle age. Yeah, I don't know. I've never looked into it.
That's tough for a man who's 31 to hear 25 is middle age.
25. Yeah, I don't know. But we just, when we saw that in America and the prizes that come with it, we were like, we'll go for that.
So I wanted to get onto that.
Yeah.
Like, it is a trip that not many people make, is to go play the Mid-Am.
Yeah.
How did that come on your radar? Because obviously it's a, like, you know what's on offer. That's, you know, the spot in the Masters, spot in the US Open, spot in the PGA. Like, is that just how you heard about it? You know that there was these rewards and you're like, let's try our hand at it.
Yeah, I guess Stuart Hagestad was the first time I noticed it. Yeah. That was when I was like 22, 23 and he was playing the Masters and making cuts. I was like, this guy's brilliant. And then you see, well, he got in because he won the Mid-Am. And then I think he was like top five in the world as well. So he was getting into the US Open and other things. And I remember we were in St. Andrews playing. We were in the practice round of the Chipping Green. And I think it was Mark Boucher that said it. And maybe TJ Ford was there and Matt McLean. So we were all 25-ish. Matt's about 45. But
Matt's catching a lot of strays in this episode.
Oh yeah, it's brilliant. I can't wait to send it to him. I think it was Boucher, said, you know, I think you can get straight in, you don't have to qualify. Because that's the thing with the US Am as well, that you mostly have to go qualify unless you're top 50 in the world. So I think the Mid Am was like top 450, 500 in the world, and so we were inside that. So myself and Matt like just went for it. And committed to it and had a great time.
You guys traveled over together, obviously living together, and then just progressively just went up the tournament. Were you on opposite sides of the bracket?
Opposite sides,
which is obviously good to the point, but when you come home then each day and you're like, you did great, I did great, and we'll see how long it keeps going on. At the back of your mind is the idea of we could see each other in the finals come into mind.
We went over, so I beat him in the stroke play, and people should always remember that. he did really well. He ended up in like eighth or something in the stroke play, having been like five over through six or something mad, but pretty early we saw we were on opposite sides of the draw, and we were just kind of joking, see you in the final. And then once it got to, I think he won a good match, quarterfinal last 16, that went down to the 20th hole. And I remember when he won that, thinking that didn't really piece it together. I was like, there's a great chance, because he was on, I think Stuart Hagestad and this lad James Lowe, who won the qualifier, were on his side of the draw, but they were, I think James Lowe got beaten. And then it was looking like he could play Hagestad. And then Hagestad got beaten. So he was looking like, yeah, about the quarterfinals, we were like, this is a great chance of.
There was a lane opening up for him.
Yeah. And then it came. Yeah, we were kind of like, and we were playing behind each other, in front of each other. So we were kind of celebrating and pushing each other on. So like I was there, there's a picture, a funny picture of us kind of like, yeah, fist bumping or shaking hands or something after we won our quarters and our semis. And then we had the final, which was strange because of weather delays. We had to play the first round in the afternoon and then we had to sleep on it. And then we had to go out and play again in the morning.
So firstly, going into the, you know, you might both make it through your semifinals. And you know you have to play each other. You travel all the way. You're staying together. How long a break was there between the semifinals and finals?
Not long. I think maybe I didn't wait for him to finish the semis. I might have gone in to start eating. And I might have seen it was probably like an hour and 20 minutes, okay. Hour and 15 minutes.
So then having to sleep on, you know, after the first 18 holes, was a 36 hole?
Yeah, 36 hole finals. We played 18. He was two up through 18.
What's that night like? Because I imagine every other night up to that point has been like,
yeah
pushing each other on, having a crack. Yeah. And whereas now you're like, okay, now we're really, it's just the two of us.
Yeah.
It's a lot, it must be a different environment going home to that.
It's slightly odd. It's slightly odd, like playing each other, because it's a funny sport, like it's a gentleman's sport, but you're trying to beat each other.
There's also the added, like, you're the only two Irish lads over there, so you went over there together, like probably everyone saw you together as like the two Irish lads that came over to play in this, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you're now totally on your own because you're against each other.
Yeah, well, that this narrative that we were best friends for years. I was like, I don't even like Matt that much. No, we were. Well, me and Matt had started playing like a year or two, but that trip like was good for us. We get on well. Like we argue nonstop, but it's kind of good crack. If we're in a four, but the other two are always giving out that they're. We seem like we're fighting, but we're not. We really enjoy just arguing. If I say, like, sky's blue, he's like, well, it's not blue. So all that kind of crack. He just says the opposite to me. But we did well. Like, we didn't get on each other's nerves. But going back, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more quiet in the car. And then we went back. It was fine. I remember we had a bowl of Doritos and we watched the Golf Channel. We were on the Golf Channel. Then we had dinner. We were staying with the lad who caddied for me, Dan Benenham, and his wife. So we had some steaks that night, and Matt's girlfriend Kate was there. So we all had dinner together, and again the Golf Channel came up, and I have a video on my phone of it, and I was slagging him, saying I'm going to turn around tomorrow and stuff. So it was a bit of lightheartedness. Then again, you wake up the next morning, it's a bit more serious, then a bit more quiet, which is fine. Like, we both know what we're playing for, and we just do things how we want to do things. And then we played, and then we had a pint against afterwards. You know, I had needed probably 20-30 minutes to myself to, you know, get over that, but then it's over and you kind of, that's nothing you can do.
Those 20-30 minutes you take yourself, are they different to 20-30 minutes you take after the Irish Amateur or the Close or whatever it is? Is it different because of what was on the line in terms of the potential rewards?
Yeah, I was pretty emotional. Just gutted. He played great golf. I think we had plenty of birdies. I think we had 19 birdies between us. So like a lot of time you get to the final, you're so tired that the golf can
sometimes it's not the best golf on
the show. Yeah. So I remember making too many bogeys, but I fought back pretty hard at the end. I birdied 13, 14, 15, and I felt like just gutted and went off. And again, it's just the emotions of sport, you know. You start thinking about it's over then, you know. Like, I really believed I was in that, like you said, in really confident state for the North South Close. Then I went into this, I felt really confident, I felt I was gonna win, and then you don't, and then it dawns on you, and then you're by yourself, you know. you know, you think about your family and stuff, and then I'd be thinking about my dad, who passed away, and yeah, so it was tough. But again, you just have to fight hard to not let it swamp you. So I took a minute and was looking over the course and just thinking, like, it was an amazing week. Match play is tough like that. There's one winner at the end of the day, and the guy who gets come second has had a pretty monumental journey to come second. But so it's a bit emotional. But then you just, that sport, there's nothing you can do. You can't like look back and say, well, can I change this or change that? It's done. So you have to take your hats off to Matt and stuff. So, but you need that time to just digest it and to not be bothered by anyone, so that you don't hit a journalist a punch for saying the wrong thing, you know, because yeah, they were like that, you know, you're like, what's it like losing to your best friend and blah blah blah, and you're like, man, I don't want to, you know, you don't want to answer those questions straight away.
Yeah.
Well,
so do you have one more US mid-arm in you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm planning to go to Q school at the end of the year again, try and get through it. But so it kind of clashes in September, which is kind of first stage time of year. But I don't know, it's a great event. It's a great opportunity for a full-time golfer who's still a young mid-am to give it a rip. You know, last year I was a bit disappointed. I got beaten by a guy who's 6-under for 13 or 14 holes. So that's how match play can work. But yeah, if I have a good year, I probably will give it a go. You know, the opportunities to play the Masters and the US Ams or US Open it's a great opportunity for a full-time golfer. I mean, you know, otherwise you'd be what, top 50 or 60 in the world as a pro. So no, I think I probably will give it a go.
So you spoke there about being a full-time golfer. There's a lot of supports that kind of come into play with that. It's a full-time job to be basically a full-time amateur now. How big an undertaking is that?
Yeah, it's you know, people talk about it, like, it can be, I guess, a little unfair, you know, if you go to the West and some of the championships and there's only like 10 or 15 lads who are like that, and a lot of the time one of those guys wins. And I understand that can be unfair for guys who are working full-time and just playing on the weekends and are playing a really high standard.
Guys who are playing in the West and are still working full-time are not just playing on the weekends, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of evenings and days off. But but at the same time, we have to use that to propel ourselves to try and play in the big events. And so it's a big advantage for me. And like, I have a couple of sponsors now that you're allowed as an amateur to have. So that was last year was Unifar and Cameral, which is PGA Catalonia. Sorry, PGA Catalonia has changed to Cameral now. And so that was a big help because obviously you're paying, like, it's a massive expense. And the Walker Cup year was a big year, you know, went to America and South Africa and everywhere. So it's you couldn't do it without the backing of those guys. And Ireland's a great place for philanthropy and help, and people want to help you and try and push Irish sport. I couldn't really justify doing it without them. So that is a big help. And then yeah, there's lots of cool perks that come along with it, you know, being into golf. And you get, you know, I wear Lynx Soul gear that's, you know, American gear from the Ashworth and Machinella, and trying out those G4 shoes there recently. They're brilliant.
I recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys get a bit of G4 stuff?
Yeah, yeah. The guys from G4 are very good to us. Obviously Callaway support us as well, but G4,
okay,
they got in touch with us recently. The shoes are...
Yeah.
The shoes are lovely. They are really, really good.
They're unreal. I wore them for the first time last week in the Spanish Am, and I was thinking I was going to get blisters and stuff, but it was really, really good. Just kind of getting helped along. Without that, you're talking about...
But no one does it alone. And no one can do it alone. As much as golf is an individual sport, like, especially from Irish amateur stuff, there's so much team golf and there's so much club team golf, like... The sport, like, no one plays it alone. Even if you're the one hitting the shots, like, you hear so many professional golfers now talk about we hit this or we hit that because they're the caddy's part of the team and whoever else is part of the team, and like, yeah, you can't do that alone. Moving on to the first event of this year, looking ahead to the West of Ireland, it's obviously the first major championship of the year, Easter week. How's preparation going toward that? I mean, obviously we're a couple of weeks out from that, but that must be the next thing on your calendar.
Yes. Yeah, it's going to be good. I think, yeah, I was sitting down last night with Jeff, my coach, and figuring out what we're going to do for that. And yeah, actually, I got a present there in the post from the West, from the club captain. And
is that allowed to? Could they be sending you a gift?
It's so the 100th centenary of the tournament was last year.
Okay.
So they've made a massive book. So for any golf historians, yeah, it's pretty cool. It's got all the results from the 100 Wests as far back, like some amount of work must have gone into it. And so that's pretty cool. Like they really put in a lot of effort, the members and the core staff and everything. That, and they're getting the Irish AM there as well. They love hosting events, which is great. And it's a big proper golf course, you know. You're not playing like a short fiddly course. So I think it's going to be a great test. So preparation is going to be good. I'm going to play probably the Baddiestown Scratch Cup and try and play loads of links golf. And yeah, keep working on everything and hopefully have a good run at it.
Because Easter's a little bit earlier this year, and obviously the West is on that Easter weekend. How much tougher of a challenge is it with like the weather at the West can just be biblical? Like, how much are you playing the course versus playing the conditions?
I think you're always playing the condition. Yeah, I think it's really used to it. You know, it's probably going to be my eighth West, I would say, and it always throws something at you. Even when we had it in September that time, you know, there was some serious rain. It's always going to throw something at you. So I think it's a big driver's course and lots of long putting on big greens. So that's what you have to be ready for. And you have to play the conditions, yeah, in the West. If you go with your simulator or TrackMan golf, then you're going to be in trouble. So you have to get that old man swing, the little low draw going.
Now that you're old at 26.
Yeah, yeah. I can barely get it up to parallel, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully loads of wind. It's great.
I guess to finish off, have you had a chance to reflect on what you would like to achieve then this year? Have you sat down with yourself as, so what, I don't want to say what would be a successful year, but what's the ambitions?
So I guess what I've learned from last year is, last year my goal was Walker Cup and turn pro, and all I was thinking about was results to get me on the Walker Cup rather than improving every week. And so this year it's not really going to be about results. Obviously I'd love to win away from home. I'd love to win an Irish championship. That's kind of standard. So I think you set that up as your marker. But you kind of work, the main goal is just to not get sidetracked on results and to get working on how I can get better. Cause at the end of the day, I need to get better to make a living from playing golf. You know, your amateur career is a good highlight, I think, of what you're able for, what you're capable of.
Sure.
Can you take on pros? So I need to improve. So what do I need to improve? And that is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And hopefully with that comes some good results and some wins.
What motivates you then?
What motivates me? That's a good question. I think, I don't know, I'm like a little bit obsessed with getting better. I think golf gives you that challenge. Just very competitive. And then my dad was just like a massive sports lover, fanatic, golf fanatic. And motivates me is just getting to realize how good I can be. And I don't know what that is yet. So I'm hoping to push for that.
Well, I'm looking forward to watching and finding out how good you can be as well.
Right.
Thanks very much for coming on.
Cheers, Johnny.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness, the return to glory.